Hello and welcome to this webinar from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, podcasts, training, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we've got over 1,000 participants across the world. And if this is the first time that you've joined us, you're really very, very welcome. Check us out and find out more at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. This is the fourth of our webinars on how business marketers are dealing with change. We're living in a world of uncertainty with COVID-19, recession and political and social conflict dominating our lives. And that calls for us to do business marketing differently, both now and in the future. So over the course of this webinar series, we'll hear from client side and agency side marketers in businesses from startup to mature corporates about topics ranging from changes in business practices to changes in purpose and culture, brand, marketing, strategy, messages and channels. And they'll be sharing experiences and offering advice. And we could have called the series therefore Share an Offer, but instead we landed on the rather more catchy Show and Tell. So we'll hear how our speakers today are seeing the impact of change on demand generation, marketing agencies and customer insight and much, much more. As you listen, type a question or comment into the questions box and I'll put your questions and comments to the speaker after we've heard from them. So please start your question or comment with the speaker's name. If you represent a business that has a B2B marketing project or role that you'd like to ask for help in filling from the community on this call, drop some details in the questions box and I'll mention it at the end of this webinar. Please also flag in the questions box if you'd like to be a speaker at a future BMC webinar, write about this one or find out more about the BMC and I'll be in touch. You can tweet along to today's webinar using the hashtag BMCShowTell. That's BMCShowTell. And our first speaker today is in the ether. You can't see him, but I'm assured he's definitely out there on the phone. He is Matthew Leopold, who is the head of brand, PR and content at LexisNexis UK. Matthew is a brand marketer specializing in making people care about and reconsider brands. And today he's going to offer his take on how business marketing is changing through sponsorship. Matthew, welcome to the webinar and over to you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. If you're going to play conference bingo, then you can get your first box ticked because, yes, I am the one who has very poor internet. I'm currently sat in a field in Essex, with absolutely no 3G coverage. So I'm dialing in the old way. As the introduction said, my core background is brand and sponsorship. And I think one of the really big, exciting areas for brands is how you can start to win over the heart of your customer. And sponsorship is a really, really good way to win over the hearts of customers. Now, the world of sponsorship is an enormous environment. So we need to think of sponsorship as part of a marketing platform rather than just itself, because good sponsorship really does need substantial multi-channel activation to bring it to life. And in B2B, in the B2B world, we generally think of sponsoring perhaps conferences, gold, silver, bronze level packages, or hospitality. So buying something in order to take people along and give them a jolly in the hope that they might mingle with salespeople and buy stuff. B2C is a much more evolved world of sponsorship. It's much broader and it's a lot more about how you can influence and change the opinions and the minds of the consumer. Now, I'm a huge advocate of sponsorship, but the truth is it can be an enormous waste of time and money. If it's done properly, it can be really successful. But if it's something that is just done by ego if you sponsor something, if you're involved in something because you think it's cool, because you think it's fun, because you have to get around the expense, then it is an enormous, a colossal waste of money. One of the big common errors that's made, by the way, I am going to be highly provocative, so please feel free to launch hand grenades and abuse and disabuse anything that I may say, is that the world of sponsorship tends to focus totally wrongly and as a huge catastrophic error on outputs rather than outcome. So the success of sponsorship is so often measured in quasi KPIs, such as the number of people that have seen it, or the value, the media equivalent, the media value that sponsorship might achieve. And these are all just bluntly vanity metrics, right? At the end of the day, we need to know how something's worked. Has it shifted in opinion? Has it ended up in a sale, rather than some of this fluffy stuff that we quite often do? And in order to progress that forward, in order to change the way that we think about sponsorship, we need to stop just thinking about that it works. We don't need to just think about why it works. We really, really need to think about how it works. We need to unpack that, go down the depth, and really understand what it is that customers care about. And in my opinion, that the single magic thing that we need to think about is about connection, right? That customers care about things that they care about, right? Well, that's pretty bloody obvious, right? But actually, they don't care about your brand. The fact that you've slobbered your brand all over someone's t-shirt or all around the conference stage doesn't mean that A, they're going to notice it, or B, that they're going to give a flying monkey whether you're involved or not. So think about what is the connection that the audience have with the property that is being sponsored and why they should care about you and why they should care about your package. So take, for example, Vitality and Park Run, right? It's not a B2B sponsorship, but I'll use it as I think it's a great example. So instinctively, you might just go, well, hold on a second. Why is there a link between Vitality and Park Run? Why are the runners going to give a flying toot about insurance? But actually, of course, as soon as you start to think about it, Vitality is a health insurance provider. They actively promote the importance of health. They actively promote the importance of exercise, and they reward those that do. So when people start to understand that is the connection, suddenly the sponsorship becomes clearer and the value that can be added is far greater. And I'll leave you with one last real bugbear of mine, and that is the idea of shared values. Now, apologies. Well, no, not apologies. I'm probably going to insult some of you here, and I hold no qualms about doing so. Ask consumers to apply values, i.e. human characteristics, to their brands, are absolutely barking up the wrong tree. Right, I'm going to read you a quote here from a well-known sofa manufacturer. So a sofa manufacturer says, superficially, you may not think that a sofa brand should support the Olympics. From a brand partnership perspective, we share common values with Team GB. So my question to you is, what are the common values that a sofa manufacturer shares with Team GB? And the truth is, no one outside of a marketing boardroom has any idea what that means. So talk in customer language, make things make sense to customers. And I think that is to see a proper step change in how sponsorship really works. Because whilst we're in B2B, customers still by using emotion as well as brain. And that is what we can use sponsorship to do. That's me over, soapbox down.
Thanks, Matt, for really holding back there. it's good to hear your thoughts. I'm sure that's generated some questions. I hope it has. If you've got any questions for Matthew, please start your question with, hey, guess what, Matthew, and put them in the questions box, and I'll put those questions to him when we've heard from all of our speakers. Yeah, and you can also, as a reminder, tweet along to our webinar today using hashtag BNC Showtel. That's BNC Showtel. We've got three more brilliant speakers to come. My next speaker, I just need to check whether she's there, actually, because I can't see her on my screen now, and it might be we'll need to come back to her. Dafina, are you there?
I am here.
You are there. Very good. Okay, cool. So our second speaker, as I've kind of just given away a little bit, is Dafino Grassi Penny, who is the managing director of Green Target. And Green Target advises global financial institutions and companies operating in the intersection of finance and technology. Dafina is going to offer her take on how business marketing is changing through PR activism. So, Dafina, welcome to the webinar, and over to you.
Thank you very much. And obviously, coming from a PR world, I'll be a little bit more conservative than previous. So obviously, Green Target, you know, advises mostly financial services and professional services clients, as you mentioned. So I'll be speaking from a B2B perspective here primarily. And what we're seeing among our client base is really an acceleration of existing trends that obviously our listeners will be familiar with. So for example, we're seeing greater adoption of digital marketing channels. We're seeing a greater rebalancing between earned media and owned media, with greater use of owned channels, which will lead me to the kind of PR activism piece. And then we're also seeing more corporate engagement and more corporate activism from senior leaders. So as a result, we see, as a result of these three changes and the acceleration of these trends, we're seeing senior leadership within businesses adopting a more direct communications approach with their stakeholders, whether that's kind of reducing their reliance on pure marketing channels such as events and advertising and sponsorship, to using more soft power channels such as LinkedIn, podcasts, and even Instagram. You know, believe it or not, a lot of finance industry CEOs are now on Instagram to connect with the greatest number of end users, because it's very much kind of a demand-led industry. So from a client's perspective, there are really three key business drivers that are leading their adoption of these channels and the kind of the adoption of corporate activism. First is, if you look at a change in demographics, for the first time in our history, we have multiple generations living at the same time, more than ever, so perhaps sometimes four or five generations, which means that there isn't a single generation, such as it's been the case in the past, with a silver dollar influencing demand. So we're seeing, with the rise of entrepreneurship in particular, we've seen the rise of millennials, and so these are influential end users that companies are having to take account of. And what happens with these new end users is that they bring with them their own values, which is also partly the reason why we have seen this acceleration of adoption of environmental, social issues and governance factors rising up the agenda. Of course, they've been there for a long time, but we've seen with things like Extinction Rebellion, and also more recently with other examples, how these issues are actually rising up the agenda. So this is making companies more activist, because they want to make sure that rather than being attacked by end users, that they actually have a direct line of communication with them so they can explain their strategy to them. Second is, you know, in the financial world in particular, we have competition from non-financial players. So for example, looking at my client base, if you're a bank or you're an asset manager or you're financial market infrastructure, you're seeing competition not just from, you know, we've all heard about fintechs. So they're not only seeing competition from fintechs, but also from tech entrants trying to enter the financial sphere. And this is pushing the financial industry to be less insular, because in the past it's been an industry which hasn't really felt the need to necessarily explain itself very much. Whereas now it's all about kind of being that, you know, the trusted counterparty, you know, looking at the legacy, looking at brand values and so forth to connect with end users. So to explain the purpose of what they do to a larger number of people. And the third factor that's contributing to change is really competition for talent, because if you look at, you know, from the perspective of city firms or Wall Street firms, they're no longer competing with talent just with each other, but they're actually competing with tech companies. And so there is a greater need to engage out there with a wider community beyond the city, beyond Wall Street, to actually explain to tech talent why they should be joining a financial firm, why they should be joining a bank, a Goldman Sachs or another bank, versus, for example, a Google or a Facebook, which is where a lot of the tech talent has tended to go in the past few years. So these are obviously three very concrete business reasons why companies are becoming more activist in their communications. But looking at beyond the business reasons for embracing change, there's another factor that's driving this rise towards PR activism. And that's the changing nature of media, because the media is operating with fewer resources than ever. And so they have less bandwidth than ever to cover stories which are important to companies, but which are increasingly not really deemed newsworthy to to the journalists that don't pass the threshold of newsworthiness. And that doesn't mean that they're not important corporate stories, but simply there is an appetite among the media. And we've noticed this more recently. For example, the media is investing resources in kind of very high stakes stories. So we've seen the Wirecard scandal and the FT, for example. There's been kind of a lot of resource that's been put behind that particular story. We've also seen, obviously, with other cases with Brexit and COVID, obviously, have taken a lot of bandwidth from the media over the past couple of years. So this is leading companies to use their own channels to cover news which may not be typically covered by the media. So using a podcast, for example, to talk about the behind the scenes of an M&A transaction, or talk about citizenship initiatives or things like diversity and inclusion. A lot of important issues that companies are putting a lot of resources in, but that are not finding necessarily the appetite in the media to get a lot of exposure for those issues. So mediums such as corporate podcasts give them more control over the message, but also allow them to go into a lot more detail, which they may not have had the opportunity to do with the earned media. And I don't know whether you follow him, but one individual has embraced, he's not a client, so I'm just using him as an example of someone that I follow, who's embraced this new way of communicating, is Bernard Looney, who's the new CEO of BP. Not only, so he became CEO of BP in February 2020, and not only did he, you know, he's overseeing the biggest transformation of, you know, BP from an oil major to an integrated energy company, but he's also at the same time overhauling the way the company communicates. So you'll notice he's the first CEO of an oil major who's on Instagram, communicating, responding directly to people. He uses LinkedIn to communicate, to share news about the strategy, which means that journalists, rather than having to engage with journalists on a one-on-one basis, the journalists are actually now flocking to LinkedIn to actually find out what he's thinking and what his views are on the strategy. And interestingly, when he joined us here, he moved budgets away from corporate advertising to corporate advocacy, because he felt that, you know, that there was a bit of a gap between, you know, what the BP was claiming and the issues that they seem to care about and the actions on the ground, whereas now he's trying to align advocacy with actual actions, so their words with the actions of the company as well. Another one is Ray Dalio. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's the founder of Bridgewater Associates, which is one of the largest hedge funds in the world. He's taken to LinkedIn initially to impart advice about his best-selling book, Principles. And he actually built a community beyond his original following of people who were interested in his hedge fund or knew about the hedge fund industry. But increasingly, I've noticed he's using LinkedIn to address reputational issues and what he perceives as, for example, the media's misrepresentation of the firm. There was a bit of a spat between Bridgewater and the Wall Street Journal, for example. So he's preferring to take his case to LinkedIn, i.e. kind of the new court of public opinion. So it's interesting to see an industry like financial services, but also like oil and gas, very, very conservative in the past. They're really embracing these new channels. So just to conclude, you know, what are we as agencies doing to embrace change? We're having to become more curious ourselves, you know, from being a very insular industry, we're becoming more outward looking and actually embracing marketing and digital marketing tools, whereas in the past we've been very much about, you know, PR versus marketing. Now it's all about kind of understanding what tools are out there, understanding, you know, the relative importance of each tools and medium, and then explaining that to our clients. But we're also upskilling, we're building, you know, what we've done a lot during the past 6 months, for example, we've been upskilling our team to build expertise and knowledge to make sure that, you know, we can anticipate how communications will evolve in the future.
Dafina, thank you. Thank you so much. And you didn't hold back quite as much as I think you said you were going to at the start. It's quite a controversial topic, I think, PR activism. So thank you for taking us through that. If anyone's got any questions for Dafina, please start your question with Dafina. And put them in the questions box, and I'll put those questions to her when we've heard from all of our speakers. We're also welcoming questions for LexisNexis's Matthew Leopold, our first speaker, and a reminder that you can tweet along at hashtag BMC Showtel. That's BMC Showtel. Time then for our third speaker, B2B marketing leader, Sumeet Vamani. Sumeet is a change maker. He's an innovator, a marketing leader who pivots organizations and teams to be fully flexible in a digital world. Today he's going to offer his take on how to create a flexible approach in marketing in a world of constant change. Sumeet, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the webinar, and over to you.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks everyone for having me. So as Dave said, I'll be talking really today about some of the sort of things to be thinking about when we think, you know, future flexibly, you know, in terms of trends in marketing as we move forward in a post-pandemic world. So marketing is often at the epicenter of change, and none so more than what we've seen over the last few months. You know, constantly seeing new technologies, channels, trends and focuses. It can sometimes be a bit of a challenge to keep up. And as new generations come into the workforce, we're increasingly leading or part of multi-generational teams, and our customers' use of technology and engagement with marketing messaging channels and campaigns vary significantly. So the challenge for the B2B marketer has never been higher than today. So as I said, I'll try and look into my crystal ball and give a view of some of the trends to watch and help you along the way. And my first sort of trend that I wanted to touch on was really around B2B influencers. And influencers is an area that often gets viewed very negatively. Maybe it's the idea of a Love Island celebrity attempting to plug your product on Instagram, colouring your judgment. But personally, I think the idea of influencers is actually grounded in the world of B2B, where communities, user groups, and peer-to-peer recommendations have long been a part of many a B2B marketer's playbook. Cisco's user group community is legendary in the IT SaaS world, as having created a strength of community that collaborates in design, delivery, and peer review of technology and solutions with super users, the influencers of their day. In the world of channel marketing, you know, we've often looked at influencers in terms of reviewers, those that work in trades and trade associations, those that are credible users, maybe they're more technology savvy and they sit in those user groups. Some of those endorsers who are very selective of who they endorse but create buzz when they do, recommenders during the selling process, and those that go beyond the recommendation for that little bit more incentivization. In the world of B2B, always on thought leadership is more important than ever, particularly in a world where over 70% of vendor selection is done before companies have even engaged with a sales rep. So influence is a means of partnering with experts and trusted authorities to guide customers forward. In a world where peer-to-peer recommendation and customer reviews are seen as more authoritative than owned content, you know, that's increasingly becoming a focus for many of us. Working with the right influencers will build your credibility, and 74% of B2B marketers believe it has a positive impact on customer experience, and 63% agree that it drives results. So, you know, why wouldn't you look at influencers as they help you to increase your social reach and crucially increase both brand advocacy and leads? And surely that's the holy grail of every B2B marketer. The second area I want to focus on is on events. And God, haven't we heard a lot about events over the last few months? And us here sitting today in a virtual one. I mean, they've been the cornerstone of B2B marketing companies for over the years. Trade shows, partner events, roundtable events, large-scale industry events. We've all been there. We've stood at those booths, and we've done our time, and we've focused on building those presentations to try and, you know, drive forward our brand advocacy in those worlds. You know, and for some of us, you know, although there hasn't been very much return, it was always a good excuse to get other parts of the organization out of the office and into meetings. And to others, it's been the lifeblood of their business and generator of large amounts of revenue. And while we've pivoted to virtual events, you know, I think everyone can probably agree that we will probably pivot back to some form of human to human in-person event. And I think I was reading the other day that 56% of event marketers believe that in-person events will be back in 2021. And actually 61% of B2B marketers believe that in-person events, even after a pandemic, believe that it's still the most critical marketing channel. Equally, I've heard the death knell for events being rung, you know, with travel and events, the largest budget potential saving in the crosshairs of the CFO. Some of them in the marketing world are keen to continue in this digital format. But for me, I think the future of events is actually a bit more radical. I think it could be AR and VR. I believe the days of sitting in 30-minute or hour-long speeches or product presentations are long gone. For who has the attention span? I think Salesforce CMO recently admitted that in a Zoom world, the optimal attention span is 12 minutes. And I have no doubt as we move through generations, it isn't far off that in the real world. We as marketeers will be tasked with creating more compelling experiences, more bite-sized, more modular. And the introduction of augmented and virtual reality enables attendees to experience products and solutions in a way they couldn't imagine before. Think of the rise of the QR code in our daily lives at the moment and what that possibility can mean for booths and no longer being able to take away a program brochure or a white paper. Think of global events without travel, where local events have hologrammed in speakers from around the world delivering truly global events locally. It's a CFO's dream, but a challenge to marketeers. We will have to be increasingly creative in our approach to events, both to satisfy budget holders, company risk analysts, and attendees, but see the possibility that the advance of AR and VR could be driven by B2B marketing. My final sort of trend that I want to focus on is digital marketing. And I think a lot of people have pivoted to digital and many are upskilling in the world they really should have understood some time ago. It's worth looking to where we are heading rather than where we are so we can get our heads around that and be more prepared. AI and machine learning. It's increasingly our technology-driven approach is going to be highly automated and machine-driven. We're already seeing this with organizations and tools that can create multiple creatives, so single images and copy sets. AI being used to deliver personalized content in the moment to a customer or prospect. This will exponentially grow. It's key to get our heads around this key element of the marketing of the future. Equally, increased automation. We'll see the rise of marketing ops in the marketing function. If it isn't already, and it increases the focus on roles that will bring the human touch, creativity, strategy, technology oversight. We've all seen the algorithm mess in the UK this summer to know that automation is only as good as the data and the pipes between it. So expect the future to be a blend of human and machine. The third one I look at is conversational marketing and chatbots. Much of this is now being deployed, but you haven't heard of Drift or Zendesk. They're worth looking up. Chatbot technology is increasingly being deployed as a means of lead capture and routing, alongside being able to shape owned property digital experiences. These tools are a great source of accelerating marketing to sales activation, as well as a tremendous source of data to be mined and to develop learnings as we continue to evolve our creation of digital experiences. And finally, social media. Whilst LinkedIn sits on the royal throne of B2B marketing now, I would always advise us to be looking to the next technology platform on the rise and trends of how we use those existing platforms. Increasingly, WhatsApp and closed communities are on the rise, and you know, there are some great examples of successful use cases for B2B peer engagement in sort of chat environments. Equally, some have gone and thrown that into the TikTok ring, which could be more interesting if the news of the last couple of days in being that Oracle could be the main investor moving forward. I fully expect the BMC to be TikTok haven for the future. And if you're a fan of Instagram stories, LinkedIn is currently beta testing a similar feature, so watch this space. I've no doubt that my crystal ball may prove to be a challenge for some of you to get your heads around and may equally be disproved completely, but I hope it leaves you for food for thought as we think about the future of marketing.
Sameed, thank you. Thank you so much. And I know Elise, who markets the BMC, will be listening to this and already working on her TikTok strategy for the next few weeks and rising to your challenge. So thanks for that. If you've got any questions for Sameed, please start your question with Sameed and put them in the questions box. And I'll put those questions to him when we've heard from all of our speakers. We're also welcoming questions for LexisNexis's UK's Matthew Leopold and for Green Targets to Fina Grafsey-Penny, who are our first speakers. It looks like we're quite quiet on questions at the moment, which is fine from my perspective because I've got a wad of questions of my own here. But if you want to interrupt my flow, do feel free and drop your questions in the questions box in the next sort of few minutes or so. A reminder that you can tweet along to this webinar at hashtag BMC Showtell. That's hashtag BMC Showtell. So to our final speaker for the day, Stefan Dering is Brand Strategy Lead for PwC UK. Stefan is a creative and experienced brand strategist and marketer, passionate about world-class brand and communications delivered through a creative, customer-focused and results-oriented manner. And Stefan's going to offer his take on how business marketing is changing through brand purpose. Stefan, I'm delighted you could make it today. Thanks for joining us, and over to you.
Thanks very much, Dave. Yeah, and hello, everyone. So yeah, as Dave said, so my name is Stefan Dering, and I'm Brand Strategy Lead for PwC here in the UK. And I'm delighted to be joining the BMC Marketing Club webcast on change today and what we're doing about it at PwC. And thanks very much to Dave and all the team for putting on such a great series of events for B2B marketeers, and thanks for having me. And thanks also to the great insights from Matthew, Dafina and Sumit so far, which I found really, really interesting and already got lots of takeaways for myself as well. So I think for me, the thing that struck me most is that change has already happened. Change this year has been absolutely like we've never seen before. And earlier this year, the world pretty much changed completely overnight, unlike anything we've ever seen before. Everything was unprecedented, we know, which quickly became sort of the most overused word in media, on television, in lots of marketing that we saw across the board, and everything was sort of suddenly happening across an unprecedented scale. But even before the pandemic hit, change was already happening at this massive scale. And I think COVID has really only accelerated the impact of these major kind of societal macroeconomic changes that we've already seen so far, you know, things from the fourth industrial revolution to inequality, to the skills gap, and of course, climate change, you know, and actually the impacts of climate change, which are sort of really, really kind of coming to a tipping point. And COVID has really, really accelerated all these things and the impact of all these things, and actually allowed people to, or forced people to actually really focus on doing things differently, and forced people actually to almost take a step back and think about actually how can we solve some of these enormous problems for the future. So at PwC, as I'm sure happened with many organizations across the world, the last 6 months have completely been dominated by this tremendous change that we've seen throughout the COVID pandemic. And we had to react very quickly to help guide our own people and our clients with the crisis. And the immediate focus was, of course, crisis and resilience management, how we can help our clients with the crisis, how we can sort of pivot our organization to really focus everything on this sort of monumental change that we've seen. And at PwC, we kind of look at it in three different phases, which are mobilize, stabilize, and strategize. So mobilize is kind of the very immediate operational challenges of this, of the crisis, in this case, the public health pandemic, of lockdown. For us, it was things like pivoting 22,000 people to working from home. You know, home working has existed for years, but we've been doing it sort of one day a week. It's been kind of, you know, a little bit of testing here and there, but we've never had kind of the entire organization seeing this across the globe work from home simultaneously. Can the tech even hold up? And you know, it did, because obviously we put a lot of investment in it, so did a lot of other companies. But it's also taking care of the immediate health and well-being needs of our people, galvanizing resources to ensure business continuity, and helping clients get through that very immediate stage of mobilization. The next phase is really stabilizing. So after those immediate threats are over, how do we work to stabilize businesses in this situation, continue our ongoing book of work, our commitments to clients and projects, and figure out what clients need from us at this time? And then finally, strategize. And I think that's really the phase that we're in now, as we come to terms with the longer term implications of COVID and living in this new normal, as it's been branded, and what it means for us to operate and how we can help keep our clients, governments and societies to find a new way forward. And I think what's really important in this, and what has been very important to us at PwC, is the power of brand purpose in all of this, and the power of brand purpose within organizations. And all of our decision making at PwC is really guided by our purpose, which is to build trust in society and solve important problems. And it's for me, brand purpose is that guiding North Star for brands to really be able to shape their work, their value, and their impact on the wider world at large. And at PwC, we always position everything that we do through that lens of purpose-led and values. And it's really, really important to us as an organization. And I think most importantly for me, it can't just be marketing messaging, a promise, you know, sort of marketing fluff, you know. And I think since Simon Sinek's kind of seminal TED talk a few years ago on brand purpose, it's, you know, become one of those cool things that many marketers love to talk about. But really, with purpose, actions have to speak louder than words. It has to be the way that organizations operate and do business. And the marketing side almost comes after that. You know, if you live and breathe your purpose, yes, then you can talk about it. It has to be authentic. It has to be real. It can't be purpose washing or words on walls or websites, but it has to really run through your organization at all levels. And I think when brand purpose is done right, it helps put your brand where it matters most, you know, in the hearts and minds of your clients. And I think, you know, all the speakers so far, you know, Matthew DeFinis has talked about this emotional connection to brands that we can, you know, sort of try and elicit through various different ways. I think brand purpose really helps you do that, because it helps you stand for something in the market. It helps differentiate you. It helps create that distinctiveness. And there's, you know, there's been a lot of research by people like Professor Byron Sharp around creating that mental availability for brands, getting that mental recall at the moment of choice. And I think brand purpose helps you get that emotional connection to your customers or prospects, and can help you create that emotional response. And I think that's when you've got that, when you know clearly what you stand for in the hearts and minds of your clients, that's when people, you know, pick up the phone to you in a crisis. That's when people put you on their pitch list for different client projects or work. And I think in times such as that we've seen now, in times of extreme change, I think what's really important for organizations and for the marketing community is to really double down on purpose and really to live and breathe it more than ever. So to conclude, really, I was just thinking about kind of what's next, you know, as we move into this third phase. I think, Sumit, you called it a post-pandemic world, but I'm not sure if there really is, if we will ever be post-pandemic. I think this is something that we just now have to live with, and will continue to affect us in some way, shape or form as we move through the next kind of years and decades perhaps, right? But as we move into this sort of next immediate phase of change, as economies start to reopen and clients are starting to re-engage with these pre-COVID challenges that are still very much on the horizon, like Brexit, disruptive technology, regional inequality, the Black Lives Matter movement, and climate change, of course. I think what we need to focus now on is really that recovery, getting that better, that fairer, that greener recovery. And I truly believe that marketeers have a key role to play in this recovery. Marketeers as a community are creative, they're resilient, they're imaginative, they're strategic, they're analytical. And we've always tried to make sense of the world through the lens of the customer, caring about the customer experience. And I think at the heart of this recovery will be people working together, finding new solutions and caring for each other. And I think the more we do this, the better the outcomes will be for organizations, for people and for society at large. So thank you.
That's a really optimistic way of ending there, Stefan. Thank you so much for that. And if people have got any questions for Stefan, do ping them now, starting your question with Stefan. We'll put those questions to our speakers as soon as you ping them through. But in the meantime, I'm going to launch in with my own kind of. I've been feverishly taking notes through each of our brilliant presentations today, and I'd like to start with Matthew, who I think spoke really boldly about sponsorship. Matthew, you kind of warned of the vanity approach to sponsorship, and I wonder whether you think on the B2B marketing side we're more guilty of that than our B2C counterparts might be.
So I think very much not. I think one of the pure joys of B2B marketing is the fact that everything needs to have an ROI and everything needs to come back to the cash value and the sales return. And that's a really healthy thing to have in the world of marketing. It is a huge, enormous challenge, however, in the world of brand, because we really do struggle to put the pound and pence ROI on. So the vanity metrics, actually, I fear, particularly in the world of social media, my business has started creeping into the world of, well, how many likes did that post get? How many views of that video did we get? And they're all very helpful levers, but they're not levers that actually steer us in the right direction or necessarily are going to make any difference to the sale. So those are the vanity metrics. And no, I think very simply, I think B2B and B2C, we are all guilty of wanting to find a metric that makes us look good and that we're proud to share. And I think we just need to be brave enough and bold enough and say, you know what, this is relevant.
So bold in your answer to your questions as much as in your overall talk. Thank you. Dafina, you spoke really, I think, approachably around PR activism. I did wonder, though, whether the kind of move to kind of less traditional PR that you're talking about there also has an impact on the credibility of the messages that we give over PR, because we're kind of potentially moving over to media that has a reputation for being less trustworthy than the kind of traditional media of old. So do you think the whole move towards PR activism is in turn going to impact the credibility of PR?
No, I think in terms of the credibility of PR, I mean, for the companies that are taking advantage of these new channels and platforms, I think we've seen them backfire for people who have taken the message, you know, a little bit to the other extreme. So when I talk about PR activism, I make a distinction between that and, you know, purely, you know, what we in the past used to kind of understand marketing to be, so a direct message to consumer, you know, without trying to hide behind a hidden meaning or trying to Stefan's point, you know, appearing as if you care about the client. You know, it's a direct message about a product that you have to offer to the client, and you know, if you're able to solve a problem for them, then great, you know, it's a great match. So I think with the examples that I cited there, so Bernard Looney and Bridgewater, Ray Dalio, they work because they are authentic. So I'm not saying that everyone who embarks on these or starts to adopt these types of new mediums will have the same rate of success. Now, I think there has to be a degree of authenticity, and you know, you build that trust and credibility through authenticity. And then gradually, then you can have a dialogue about things that perhaps matter to you.
Thank you. Sumit, you made quite a strong case, I think, for focusing more on B2B influencers in our marketing going forward. I'm intrigued, though, as to why you think you're needing to make that case. Why is it that B2B marketing has ignored influencers as a big opportunity in the mix today?
I hate to throw grenades at B2C marketers, but no.
Go on. I tried to get Matthew to.
I do think that the word influencer and sort of its association with some of the sort of negative things that we've seen about social media and about, say, body image and about sort of how we sort of interact on social media channels. I think that has sort of seeped its way into marketers being more wary about the word influencer and doing influencer marketing. And so it's unsurprising that it's kind of, that's sort of then preventing many B2B marketers from really looking at that as an area. But equally, I don't think we're framing it and thinking about it in a way that that, you know, benefits us as B2B marketers and actually could drive forward the organizations that we work for. And I do think that, as I sort of outlined before, it's very much we've had the basis for what influencer marketing is branded now in B2B for many years. We just haven't called it influencer marketing. So I think it's just a question of, you know, taking back control, to use that that analogy. Taking back control of the narrative of influencer marketing and the branding of that and actually making it work for us. But we would need to sort of take our companies, our teams, our leaderships on an organization to sort of to head off some of that negative that's associated with the term influencer marketing.
Okay. Stefan, you talked about how the, and I'm using your words here, the marketing fluff needs to take a bit of a backseat to setting purpose. Do you think brand purpose and it's kind of increasing importance within organizations makes the function of marketing less important?
In a word, no, I don't think it makes the marketing function less important at all. I think brand purpose acts as a guiding North Star for the whole organization to rally around. And out of that will come amazing client work, amazing client stories, amazing value and impact that we deliver as an organization. I think the job of marketing is to tell those stories to the world in a compelling and engaging way that really drives that awareness, drives that consideration amongst customers. And I think brand purpose can help you do that because it focuses you rather than you're kind of talking about 2,000 different things across an organization, which I do see happens a lot. It provides a really helpful focus and sort of guiding North Star for organization. I think that's helpful to marketing as well because it unifies everything and it unifies people.
And once again, an upbeat answer. And I don't think I can end in a more upbeat way than that. So I'm going to say thank you to our brilliant speakers, to Matthew Leopold, to Dafina Grafsi-Penny, to Sameed Vamani and to Stefan Daring. And also thank you to our brilliant backroom team of Louise Neal, Claire Sheriff, Elise Bailey-Probert, Alex Horn and Jay Neal. And most of all, thanks to you for listening. You can listen again to this webinar from tomorrow. Next Wednesday, it's our big debating webinar with freelance marketing consultant Ayo Abbas, Selby Anderson's Dominic Hawes, Call Signs' Joe Clegg, Pay Dashboard's Laura Hughes, OpenPaid's Adam Trainis, and Odissient's Ali Richards. You'll need to sign up on our website if you'd like to take part in that one. You can also download now our weekly podcast. It's free. It's all about content marketing this week. If you want to sign up to be a member of the Business Marketing Club, you can get access to all of our events and webinars, to our amazing mentoring service for business marketers, to our white papers and blogs. And those white papers include things like a piece from Emeritus Professor of Cranfield University School of Management, Malcolm McDonald's, on how to develop financially quantified value propositions. So I really hope all of those things will make you want to sign up. We're a not-for-profit organisation, so all of our subscription fees go directly into the content that I mentioned just there. There's details of all of that at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And you can contact me if you want at davestevensnow@gmail.com. So on behalf of all of our speakers, I'll say good night and I hope you have a lovely evening. Thanks very much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.